Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on the companies we mention. Please do your own research.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Monday Upbeat Markets with me, Graham Dixon.
And me, Kevin Hornsby.
Kevin, how are you? How's your week been?
Well, week's only just started because it's Monday, but last week was good. Lots happening. World's going a bit crazy, and football was extremely boring this week. Lots of 0-0s and lots of draws. Liverpool drew, Arsenal drew, Manchester City lost, Aston Villa lost. Very strange times. Manchester United beat Manchester City in the Manchester Derby, which was a bit of a turn up for the books. I was quad biking round the pyramids on Saturday, I think it was. I sent you a picture. What did you think of that?
Well, I said to you, I think you look like you're about 25 years old all of a sudden. And you lost all, you know, you look, you've reverted 20 years.
I hope so.
Congratulations. I hope so. That's if that really is true.
I've lost 4 kilograms in the last 30 days.
And that's true. How have you done that?
I've been intermittent fasting and effectively eating once a day.
Well, I remember going to Jonathan's birthday party when I bumped into you, and there was that crazy Luke guy that we met. You know,
yeah.
I never met him for the first time. He just come off a 2-week fasting. All he was drinking was coffee and water.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very good for your system. They talk about ketones, don't they? After a certain period of time, normally about 16 hours, your body starts to use ketones instead of the stuff you put in your stomach. So in other words, it's taking fat from your system and turning it into ketones. So hence you're losing weight. It's just a reduction of calories. I suppose we go back to how maybe we developed over millennia was that we didn't always eat 3 meals a day, did we? We were waiting until we caught the animal or we grew something or whatever. So maybe we were only eating once a day or once every other day or whatever. Mm. So our bodies are overfed. What I realized in my only eating once a day was that I am a complete grazer. I graze all the time. So I just, and the fridge gets open numerous times and I'll just take a little snack, and I'm the one cooking most of the time. So I will cook for the kids or for my wife, and I will just have a little bit as well. And I had to stop myself doing that. I think that was the main reason why I lost weight, really, because I basically stopped grazing. So there you go.
Apparently it takes 30 days to break a habit, so we keep it going.
I'll start grazing again. I've just been eating macadamia nuts when I shouldn't be. So.
Okay. Yeah, well, hopefully there's more protein.
Meanwhile, Mr. Trump is trying to, how's the best way to put it?
Bully his way.
Negotiate his way into owning the places he wants to own. Which is all a bit bizarre. But what we've seen this morning...
It's the art of the deal, isn't it? It's the art of the deal.
Yeah, but what we've seen this morning is nobody likes it. Gold, six, that's preempting the price I think it's going to be at the end of the year. 4,600 and whatever it was, 60 or 70. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you'd imagine people saying to you a year ago, by the way, gold in January next year would be $4,670, they would have laughed at you.
Mm. Silver the same. January, what was it? I think it was about
2.2, 2.3 maybe. It's doubled.
Oh, yeah.
And silver this time last year was in the 32 to 35 range maximum, and it's now 95.
Yeah.
93 on the fantasy market, which is the COMEX, and the real market, which is the Shanghai physical market and probably Dubai, it's anything from 101 to 110 as we speak. If you want to buy like Britannia coins or American Eagles, in most countries now, they're $130 to $140 a coin for 1 ounce of silver in a coin. So that's the real price. That's the physical price. That's how much it costs. Yeah. And last week, I was going to buy some more silver just as my last purchase. I rang my dealer here in Egypt, and he said, unobtainium, you can't buy it.
Unobtainium, I remember that word.
Unobtainium, you can't buy it. So I couldn't buy it, I could only sell. Not available. So I ordered 3 kilograms of silver, which it sounds a lot, but it's not really a huge amount of silver. If it was 3 kilograms of gold, then fair enough. But for silver, no.
Who is hoarding the most of the silver? Who physically is?
Yeah. Nobody's hoarding it. That's the issue with the silver market. The silver is being used. And that's the difference between the gold and the silver market. Because industrial-wise, they reckon conservatively 60 to 70% of all silver produced every year is used in industrial ways.
Right.
Now, with solar panels, and we're going to be talking with Zenith about this because they've got a big solar thing in Italy. Effectively 60 to 70%. And they actually reckon that could be all of the silver production within a couple of years. And the interesting thing, I suppose, about silver in general is for 5 years now, there has been a deficit in the market. So they've just been using what has been available. And now all of a sudden, everybody's gone, oh, there isn't any silver. Mm. And that's where we're now at. The world is running out of silver. And just at the time the price explodes, what happens? Speculation occurs. So everybody starts buying physical silver. So all the people I know have been buying physical silver, you know, whether it's 10 coins, 1 coin, 100 coins, however, they've been buying silver. So now you're in a speculation. Nobody wanted it when it was $32 an ounce and I was buying it this time last year. My only regret is not filling my boots a year ago and taking the whole year to accumulate, but such is life. That's the way things go.
I read that there's some exchange traded funds now being set up to invest in silver. So you're going to get like a double whammy of exchange traded funds buying it, individuals buying it, institutions buying silver, and potentially a short position that needs to be unwound.
Yeah, but I would say to people, don't be buying the paper product, whether it's an ETF or whether it's a COMEX, because I'm pretty certain that force majeure is going to be put in place, and they have all sorts of stipulations that they don't have to pay, the real price. You know, they will bring the price down, and then get force majeure and then pay that price for the silver when the silver is maybe 20-30% higher. So I would not be investing in non-physical in these assets. And even gold to a point, I mean, maybe gold's going a bit too far, but you need the physical stuff. That's what you physically need.
I mean, force majeure is normally an act of God, right? It's something that you could not predict. I don't know how you could enforce force majeure on something that is basic capitalism. And, you know, if...
Well, believe you me, I guarantee you that's what's going to happen. I mean, these positions that, if it's true that these banks are short, I mean, I've seen situations from 4.4 billion ounces short all the way down to a more realistic 250 million ounces short. Either way, that amount of money in any of these banks will basically bankrupt the banks.
Mm. And because I listened to some podcasts the other day about JP Morgan having a large short position, but apparently they also have a very large sort of bank of physical silver in their vaults. Yeah. I don't know if that's true.
So well, this is the real problem. This is ultimately the real problem. We don't know. Nobody knows.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we just touched upon silver being used in solar panels, and what better time to introduce our next guest, who of Zenith Energy, that has significant exposure to solar panels. So, and a very warm welcome to Andrea Cataneo. Andrea of Zenith Energy, how are you?
Very well, and yourself, Graham?
Yes, very well, thanks. Long time no see.
Looking forward to catch up.
Absolutely. I think the last time I was at Optiva, I was a broker at Optiva, and Zenith Energy was I think in the midst of some operations in Azerbaijan, from memory.
Absolutely.
So things have evolved a lot since then.
Very much. It's a few years, but we have evolved very much.
Yeah, very good. And I just noticed last month you raised just over £3.5 million, but primarily out of Norway, from what I can see.
Well, Norway in Euronext Oslo is our primary market in terms of liquidity. And so we have a very big audience, roughly 10,000 shareholders. And part of them, circa 4,000, they are Swedish. And this is the reason for which we listed as well, as a courtesy for these people that are Swedish national, although investing cross-border in Oslo. We have listed as well in Stockholm to make their life fiscally and all the other thing more convenient. And so we are very satisfied of our Scandinavian diversion in the last 7 years when we went to the Oslo Bourse in 2018. But of course, our main market is the main market of London. And I'm very attached to London as a home. And so that is where we want to again market our presence and our new identity.
Okay. And are the prices between the London Stock Exchange and the Norwegian Stock Exchange, are they fairly in line with each other? I mean, I don't know.
Yes. There is, historically, we can say, no, there is a fact that when there is some trend of prices, normally they take off in Oslo. And then soon after, 2-3 hours later, London catch up.
Okay. And how did this whole thing come about in Oslo? It's unusual. We don't see many companies dual listed on the Oslo Stock Exchange here.
Yes. I don't know why. We are very satisfied with the setup and with the reason for which we went there when we were an oil and gas junior in the middle of 2010, so 15, 16, was because it's an oil and gas exchange. Let's remember that Norway, together with UK, are the two players of the North Sea big game of the last 30 years, which made Norway an extremely wealthy country. The state sovereign fund has $1 trillion put aside for the life of the Norwegian. So with this aura, the stock exchange of Oslo became very popular with oil and gas companies, but mainly Nordic or international.
Okay. Well, it's good to know. Of course, Norway is almost synonymous with its sovereign wealth fund. I think it probably owns a big chunk of the American Stock Exchange.
That is a comfort.
Yes, very much so. Do you want to tell us about your arbitration? I see there's a very large arbitration against the state of Tunisia.
So the arbitration in Tunisia comes from our very successful acquisition of four fields in 2020 and 2021 during COVID. Where the management took a great risk to live in Tunis, which was a pleasant, although dangerous location because it was labeled red for the worldwide medical organization, health organization. And so then was done. But he brought the achievement of four fields in which our net production was 1,000 barrels, purchased from China National Petroleum Corporation and from a previously listed Canadian company called Candex. These companies, especially motivated by the COVID, decided to make a fire sale, so delivered to us not only the four fields, but as well all the stock and equipment. And this made us making a very large capital gain in terms of books, but as well a great liquidity success, because all the oil, which was around $10 million in the port in our name, was equivalent to cash, especially as a few months after the end of this process, so Christmas 2021, Russia invaded in February Ukraine, and the oil price went from the 60 to the above 110. And so that was a great thing. We had just the time to say, bingo, we made it. That 2 months later, the Tunisian government sequestrated everything. So we started with the resilience, one arbitration, then a second, then a third. And so we have three arbitration ongoing. One has been won by us with a surplus condemnation award to the Tunisian of 45% in respect of our claim. We claim for 6 million, they gave us 10. And then the second instead has been lost because of irregularity, you can call it fraud. And so we are recording for annulment, and we are optimistic because our case is very strong. But then mathematically is irrelevant, because the third arbitration, which is not a contractual arbitration, but is a treaty arbitration, so arbitration on the base of the fact that we are British companies, you know, living in London, I will touch that in a second, we invested from Britain. And then this arbitration is for $573 million and contain as well the one that we have lost. So in case we won the recourse, that would be a great moral satisfaction. But economically for the investors, the last one is an umbrella containing the first and the third, the second in the third.
Andrea, the third can one. I just ask you, the funding of the legalities, is this coming from shareholder funds or is this being done through a third party?
We were, of course, very much wary of cost. And then we were, of course, contacting litigation financiers, which are specialized in this type of business. But we discovered that they are very expensive. And B, that they are very complicated in terms of legality. And so then we thought that the risk could be that the loan was a loan to own, so that we would have lost the ownership of these important claims. So as a result, we have dealt with care with appropriate law firm, important, but not extremely expensive. And we have done, as a result, everything with our own funds. Okay. So that permits us, you know, you don't want to make names, but certainly other British companies that you are observing since years, they have won big amount maybe in their arbitration, but a big chunk, like 40%, can go to the financier rather than to the shareholders because of the very expensive nature of litigation fines.
Yes, Nanoco was the one that sprang to my mind. I mean, if you ever followed that company, they used to be involved in quantum dots in televisions, and they had a huge chunk taken out of their prize money, shall we say, from the arbitration award. So yeah, if you, if you if you win this award or a very large chunk of this award, that's all for Zenith Energy and its shareholders.
Absolutely.
Very good.
So that we were contemplating otherwise, but at the end we have achieved not to use litigation finance.
And when do you expect to get a result, you know, one way or the other with this award?
You know, the hearing is the 20th of April. Then there may be some post-hearing correspondence, and depends if it's taking 1 month or two. And then, you know, 4 or 5 months of reasoning between the arbitration court members. And so October, November.
Okay. All right. And the money that you've raised, plus, you know, income from other activities, is that sufficient to get you through all the legalities of the arbitration?
Absolutely. I would say that the money that we have raised is as well helping with the development of the solar park and with the development of the uranium mines. So that is covering all the aspect of our activity. You know, we have, because of the shock of our overseas oil and gas business at that moment, the fact that we have been sequestrated when we fought to have made bingo, we have reinvent ourselves as an energy specialist, but not an overseas animal anymore. We are working only in countries where a reasonable respect of law is traditional, and so that Europe at the moment is the panorama of our activity.
Very good. I did notice on your website you do have some American operations, or is that out of date? I didn't know.
No. We have an American operation, which is a small listed company that we took control in 2024. And this was supposed to be our expansion in oil and gas. There is some small activity in oil and gas. I think that maybe to have an American small company can be very attractive for some, as being American is at the moment a strength, and apparently, and so that is an opportunity that we may have to invest in some activity, but is not very much for us oil and gas. We think that oil and gas for us is the past.
So I'm going to start the other way around, okay? So from the stuff that's actually making you money at the minute. So let's start with the solar. You've basically taken assets and taken them up the scale of value. I think mainly in Italy, is it, for the solar farms? So tell us a little bit about that. This current valuation that you had independently done is 27. And a half million euros, I believe. Where are we at in terms of that situation? And do you see that expanding, or are you at the limit with the 100 megawatts?
So the answer in order to your question. So the first thing is that we are very keen in the activity of solar in Italy, incidentally, because we produce electricity already since 10 years there. But I would say that rationally is a good choice, because France is a more complicated bureaucratic setup to make solar park. And we should remember that France geographically is already much higher in latitude than Italy. And just to give you an example how important is the location for solar, the difference of production between Milan, which everybody knows where it is, and Sicily is 40%. So just to say that you think sunny Italy, but it's not sunny Italy, the north of Italy is 40% less producing electricity in a solar park than the south of Italy. So that it makes very important the fact of the location. And so France obviously is less convenient than Italy. Italy is more sunny, and as well the bureaucracy in certain places is convenient, is reasonable. As you know, Italy is divided in 25 regions, which are like big shire, no? And in this shire, the difference of behavior is important. And so we have selected one in the north, one in the center, one in the south, that they have the reputation to be the most rational and straightforward in behavior and in process. One is Piedmont, and one is Lazio, the region of Rome, and one is Puglia. And even within this region, we have selected a small part of it in which all our investment, which are of not individual big dimension, sit nearby. What is the purpose of it? Is that then a buyer can say, no, no, I want to buy 50 mega. And we say, okay, here it is, 50 mega, made of five investment that are in a radius of 25 kilometers. So what we call cluster. And so these three cluster in south of Piedmont, in a province in Lazio, which is a small region around Rome, a reasonably small region around Rome, and in Puglia, which is a big region in the south, but again, we concentrated only in one part of it, permit us to progress, we believe, swiftly through construction and then to production, and then between the completion of construction to sale of part of the portfolio, to show the proof of concept and to show some cash as profit.
So what, I hate always asking for timescale, but that's obviously what everybody wants. What sort of timescale are we talking about in terms of the ability to vest that 50% to an investor?
I think that some sales will happen already in 2026. And so already in the forthcoming year, you know, our year start the 1st of April financially, and so that will cause already some profit. We don't want to make any rush sale because we don't need it, because this property will be producing cash for 30 years. So we should make a sensible sale. But we are anxious to make the first or the second sale because of the show of concept, the proof of concept. Why? Because a lot of people came to Italy from especially the north of Europe for obvious reason, the sun irradiation. But they have done that in a disorderly way, buying bits and pieces all over the country, and not recognizing that any place in Italy is different as food, but as well as attitude. And so to know very much your territory is essential, because if you're in the wrong place, there can be people that are antagonistic to solar for aesthetic reason. You know, some people say that too many solar parks ruin the view, and Italy is, of course, an important touristic country. And certain province, they have already too much solar. And so the local population is fed up with too much solar. So you have to know exactly where you are sitting, what is the mentality of locals, and what is as well the future projected, we cannot be sure, but projected use of electricity. Because contrary to what people think, electricity cannot travel a big distance for free. And so you need to produce where there is as well consumption.
Yeah, and obviously your Italian experience in this has obviously been essential. So do you imagine that the 100 megawatts is going to be increased in these places as well? Or you think you have the stable that you require at the minute? Because the interesting thing from my perspective when I was doing my research is that you've had an independent analysis of this at 27.5 million euros, which is approximately, 22 million pounds. You currently have a market capitalization of the whole of Zenith of 22 million pounds or 22.7 million pounds. So do you see that you will expand the solar deal, or are you happy with what you have?
You know, we are very proud to have employed scouts that they show their agility, but as well prudence in taking properties in places that are appropriate, and we need to continue in this path, not to be taken by the enthusiasm. But we plan to arrive at the end of the year before sales to 200 mega, so to double our portfolio. And so the trend is that we have been quick, which is another characteristic that the owner of the land like, because, you know, sometimes they are dragged in negotiation that lasts for months and months and then stop. And so we have a good reputation. And on top of that, we have selected, we believe, the right spot. And so we will continue to in this trend. The thing that we want to achieve with the sale is the proof that what we say is not marketing, blah, blah, but that our concept choice has been good. And so that can only be proven by somebody coming and pay a nice price for it.
Okay, very good. Okay, so moving on to the second part of Zenith Energy is the uranium assets that you've taken now in Italy, which, as you said off camera before we started talking, were basically exploration licenses. But actually, really, there's a whole uranium mine there. So tell us a little bit more.
You say that, myself, I'm very prudent.
Andrea's not case. Allowed to say that, by the way. Okay, so you say what you want to say, Andrea.
Okay, so that then we have an exploration, two license of uranium, which actually is very much the same deposit. There are two sides of the same block of mountains underneath which this uranium deposit form from volcanic origin, and then this is of course very important, is the only strong or sizable uranium site in Italy, and is in Europe, which is for me the most important thing. Europe has some uranium, but not much, but obviously the new directive of the uranium of the European government, and as well of UK, is to be concerned about sourcing uranium for the nuclear station and for potential armament needs within Europe. Because, you know, one case, for example, has been in Niger, where the French state had a fantastic mine producing uranium, but what happened has been a coup d'etat, and the new regime has taken not only the control of the government, but the control of the French mine and the control of the uranium, which has gone elsewhere and not in France. So the important thing at the moment in Europe, seems to me, is the fact that we can have our necessary mine, rare earth, uranium, and other essential metals and minerals within the European Union or the European altogether, including UK territory, in which safely this material can travel. So including Norway, which is not part of European Union, but a part of the European space, and Sweden, which is another home for us since few months, reportedly contain the 25% of uranium in Europe. And so that being home in Stockholm, we are looking as well to increase our portfolio in the uranium business.
Very good. Okay, so now I'm coming back to the main story of Zenith, or has been the main story of Zenith, which unfortunately, 2 or 3 years ago, you would have been looking at, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, actually, you would have been looking at being a thousand barrels a day producer in Tunisia of oil, with significant revenues and probably a market capitalization many, many multiples of what you have now. So tell people who don't know the story what happened in Tunisia, why do you not have those concessions that you had, anymore? And why have you not got the oil? I mean, to the point where you had storage oil and they've sold it on your behalf and not given you any of the money as well. So tell us your story.
So it's a very basic story. At the end of the day, everybody may remember the important aggravation that we had in our life during COVID, especially in 2020 and then as well in 21. And so we had the courage to make this investment in 2020 and 21. The major that we were dealing with, the China National Petroleum Corporation, they were, of course, having properties in oil all around the globe. They were very worried about producing oil at a very high cost in a smaller country like Tunisia and having to sell it at the market price that was for many months 30, 40 US dollar per barrel. So that sale was made in a very convenient price for the buyer. The other two acquisitions we made even more because it was a company in difficulty. And then as a consequence, we made at the end of 2021 a situation where we had 1,000 barrel net to us with reasonable cost of production, which they were to be brought under control by us with the very sort of prudent management of a healthy junior producing by then since 10 years oil in various parts of the world, as Graham remembered. And so that was very good. Was even better when, unfortunately, Ukraine was invaded because the oil price went up at $110 plus per each barrel of Brent. Our oil was having Brent price. And instead, unfortunately, became too good to be true because they decided to sequestrate everything in May 2022, so a few months after the Ukraine invasion. So that brought us to resiliently chase the Tunisian for damages, and so we have made.
So who? Just let me get this clear, Andre. Who sequestered the assets then? Was it the government or a government body, or who was it that took them?
In substance, was ETAP, which is the oil state company. But then the Republic of Tunisia. So our first arbitration was, which we won against ETAP, which is the company, state company, and then the NOC, National Oil Company, and then all the rest was straight the Republic of Tunisia. And in fact, the two arbitration, the one that is in court in the 20th of April, are against the Republic of Tunisia.
Okay, so the first one you won, which was against ETAP, they're paying, they should be paying you, I think it's around $9 million, is it?
No, it's $10 million. $10 million.
Okay, $10 million.
And it's becoming soon 11, because there is an interest payable for delayed payment of 14%. Okay. And which, look, 14%, which is a compound monthly. So 14% compound monthly makes a lot of money in overdue interest as well.
Okay, so is there a reason why they haven't paid? Is it they obviously don't want to pay, but is there a reason why they haven't paid, or what level do you have to go to insist on payment?
Well, you know, Tunisia has always been famous to pay their losses in arbitration cases reasonably promptly in the last 40 years. At the same time, Tunisia has gone through a coup d'etat in 2022. So then there is a deterioration of the behavior of the country. But nevertheless, you know, we don't plan to be paid amicably. There is enforcement procedures that we are already processing. At the same time, we cannot do everything at the same time, as well as management time. So at the moment, we are making the final part of the third arbitration, and then we will concentrate more in enforcement to get the first 10 million paid to us.
Okay, so let's go to the mediation that is incoming in April. What this is against the state of Tunisia for the fact that they took the assets from you between United Kingdom and Tunisia. There's an agreement there that business will be conducted in a proper manner, if you like. So how much money is that that could be given, and what is that money for, effectively?
You know, first of all, you know, Graham remembered that we are a Canadian company, but Graham remembered as well that I have been knocking his door in his office in London nearly every week for the period between 2012 to 2020, because home is London. We are listed since 2016 in the main market in the London Stock Exchange. And so from our office, when we create the subsidiaries to invest with a lot of optimism in Tunisia, we obviously do what is the most natural thing for somebody sitting in London. We create a British company. And so we create three British companies that invested in our three acquisitions in Tunisia. So that is the most natural thing to do. Having lawyers, accountants, bankers in your city, which is London. Unfortunately, we didn't expect that, but this investment, basic investment through British company, can turn out to be a positive thing, because now we are protected by the treaty between United Kingdom and Tunisia. And so this is an umbrella arbitration, because the treaty covers all the aspects of misbehavior by the country that has received the investment. And so the Republic of Tunisia will go under this treaty arbitration, which is called ICSID, the World Bank, which is sitting in Washington. So the 20th of April, we will debate all the aspects of our investment in Tunisia and all the aspects that have been taken away from us.
Okay.
The is overall $573 million, as has been reconciled between two organizations specialized in quantum calculation. So it's not only one, but nearly coming to the dollar, to the $1 million difference. Two organizations have studied our claims and quantified then finally in 573. The Tunisians, they don't really, at least part of the government, don't really pay a tremendous attention to the detail of the arbitration, because we have had the funny thing that we have been robbed again by the Tunisian of some oil, a small amount proportionally, 1.6 million, which has been announced in a press release in the months of October, that the investors can find. So October, November. And forgive me if I miss the date by a few days. And so then the Tunisian continued to rob us, like you imagine somebody that has made a bank robbery, that while the court is examining the bank robbery, they go to rob another bank another day.
Andre, the amount that they calculated, it was 573 million, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, $573 million. And because you're basically doing the legal situation yourself, there is no cut for the lawyer, or is there a percentage for the lawyer, even if it's a small percentage?
No, there is an hefty cost with the law firm, and as well you have to imagine that there is an important cost of the organization, because the arbitration is called private justice, so it's not the normal court, which are already expensive, but there are private international court, which they have their own cost. But we have not made, as we discussed before with Graham, recourse to litigation finance, which is a terribly expensive instrument, although sometimes necessary. So the costs are running every month, and we pay every month our lawyers. But the majority of the costs that we have to suffer have been incurred in the years 2022, 23, 24, and 25. Now we are in the final end of it.
Mm. So there's a potential for the $10 million with interest, as you've already talked about, and $573 million, let's round it down to $500 million just to keep the numbers round, that Zenith could be awarded to then get from the state of Tunisia.
Absolutely. So, to be totally accurate with our investors, is if we win 573, we will have to deduct in the calculation the 10 million that we have won already.
Okay.
Because the last one is an umbrella case and covers everything happened before. And so the 10 million that we have won should be, to be precise, deducted. And if we would have not lost the 130 million that we lost by irregularities, read fraud in 2025, this would have been to be deducted as well. But because we have lost it for the time being, they are not to be deducted. So it will be 573 minus 10, the maximum that we can get.
Okay. And from the point of view of Tunisia being able to pay over $500 million, what is the likelihood?
Well, Tunisia is a country that has 40 billion of GNP per annum. Let's assume in a prudent way, which is our style in our marketing campaign, that the final verdict is only roughly half of it, 300 million. 300 million is less than 1% of the country GNP, so the country can take a reasonable step with their own international bankers to pay maybe in 2-3 tranches what is due to us.
Okay, and how confident are you personally, and Zenith, I suppose, of this being upheld?
Well, you know, the fact that our case is demonstrated by the sentence of arbitration number one, which has given us not only a victory, but a victory with an increase of 45% addition. And so that is a proof of the legal base of our case, as the sequestration and the abuse made by the Republic of Tunisia are a photocopy in each case. So they have repeated the same pattern in case one, in case two, and then as a consequence, all together in case three. So the legal aspect is not basically a brainer, a problem for debate. The point that instead is important is that there are always in any arbitration a lot of details and a lot of elements that we are we trust to win thanks to the extreme competence of our lawyers. I should remind you that we have already appointed a famous arbitrator, the most important professor of France in arbitration, which is somebody that at the moment has been mandated by the government to review the law of arbitration for France, Professor Claes. We have a strong English firm, the Paris branch, which is an historical company that I worked for 40 years, which is called CRSS Speech Liberation, and based in the city, and which is becoming very strong in arbitration in various parts of the globe, Switzerland, Dubai, France, England, United Kingdom. And then we have recently appointed a very famous King Council specialized in this type of arbitration under the United Kingdom Treaty, which is Ben Juratovic, which is a star barrister for this type of arbitration case. So
very good.
The fact that we have compounded high-quality professional is suiting my concern always about banana skin and details, which are always ghosting any potential legal case. I want to the investors raise the attention that this is not a corporate quarrel. It's not a quarrel between a Silicon Valley junior and Google and sort of things in which, you know, there is maybe merit for one and merit for the other. It's a case in which we have been robbed, straight robbed. So everybody that has common sense, we recognize that we have been robbed. And then the comical aspect is that they rob us again while preparing for this hearing, which is something that maybe is an act of God, but it's very helpful because, you know, to be re-robbed again,
it's beyond comical, isn't it? It's absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, so my summation of go on, carry on, Andre.
No, I was saying that this left stupefact everybody, even the lawyers of the counterparty. So which they certainly would have not recommended such action in such a delicate moment. And so that is the joy to work with the disorganized counterparty. No, and if you think that in our last acquisition, we have been sequestrated by the Ministry of Industry, Mine and Oil, but we have been recognized by the Company House, which is state like in England, by the Security for Workers, which they was dealing with us in a daily basis for the payment of security and pension of the workers, and even comically more by the Ministry of Finance, which sent us a bill for the oil we produce, which instead we never produce it because we were sequestrated. So that is just to say the strength of the case.
Yes, very good. Okay, so my summation of it is solar power is probably worth at least the current market capitalization, and if you increase that to 200 megawatts, could be twice the market capitalization. You have uranium licenses, and you're looking to expand those licenses, as you suggested, into Sweden as well. And then you have already $10 million with a 14% increase per annum going for the Tunisian oil from the oil stake or the state oil company of Tunisia. And then we've got the big play, if you like, which is £500 million, $500 million plus.
Dollars
against the Tunisian government. So all in all of that for 22.7 million, and you've got a few other bits and pieces that we didn't talk about, means right now that Zenith is material undervalued. You don't have to answer that question, but I'm going to give you the most important question that we're going to ask you, Andrew, which is, what is your favorite food to eat?
The most desirable food for me, which is a pity that I cannot enjoy in Tunisia, is fish.
Mm. What type of fish?
Well, you know, the type of fish that was actually served in Tunisia, you know, any sort of fresh fish from the Mediterranean Sea. So that is the big regret that I have, having lost the opportunity to live in Tunisia. But I should add an additional point of interest, which, of course, you should not listen to me, but judge by yourself, is the peer comparison between small uranium companies, which of course none of them produce, but just have the potential of exploration of a site. And so if you make a comparison of these companies, which are normally Canadian, and but some as well in Sweden, as I said, and some in England, the minimum company which has the less favorable situation in terms of deposit has a market cap of $45 million, and listed company, and the bigger one, $200-300 million of market capitalization. So look at it, and it's an interesting point to make a sense of how attractive is already our third leg, which is the uranium investment.
I was actually thinking you were going to say that the uranium enhances the quality of the fish there for a second, but anyway. The other question we ask all our guests is, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received, and what's the best piece of advice you've dished out and given others?
Well, the best piece of advice that we received in May 2022, when we were contemplating having been robbed of everything, has been keep going. In the sense, be resilient and don't give yourself, don't give in, and insist to make the necessary to recoup what has been robbed to you. And then as a consequence, the best piece of advice that I would be giving to somebody in similar situation is says, never give in.
No, again, very Winston Churchill-like, I think.
Well, I didn't remember that aspect. If not, I would have not been so grand. But thank you for the historical.
Very good. Thank you so much, Andrea, for coming on Monday Upbeat Markets, and wish you all the best, especially with the arbitration. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for your wishes.
Thank
very
you,
nice
Andrea.
To see you.
I see. Yeah. What's catching your eye this week, Kevin?
What's caught my eye last week was we had Ippolito on shortly after they'd raised the money at 5.5p. So Ajax came out with a deal, an updated deal for their silver asset in Chile. And he is some negotiator, I tell you. He's basically going to be paying those shares at 25p. Current share price is, I think, 11, I think it is, and he's going to pay the fees at 25p with some cash. And interestingly, we've talked about silver a bit at the start. This project has up to 32 million ounces of silver, and potentially more if they do a bit more drilling and stuff. So the 32 million ounces of silver at $100 an ounce is going to be worth a hell of a lot of money. That's $3 billion. Or more than $3 billion, maybe, I think. So, Ajax Resources looks a cracking one.
They've had a good rally from the placing price. Was it 5.5p?
5.5p.
It touched over 11p, so it's doubled from the placing. And they've still got plenty of cash left, haven't they? From memory.
They've got loads of cash. They've got loads of cash left, and not only loads of cash, you know, they're going to be very news-driven over the next while. I mean, they've got lots and lots of news coming in. Ippolito messaged me this morning. He's just on his flight now to Argentina. I can see big things ahead. I mean, you can take your small gain now if you want, but I think there's going to be much, much bigger gains. And obviously Ippolito is the son of Andrea, who we've just interviewed. It's in the family, if you like. They know what they're doing. Ippolito has been heavily involved with Zenith in the mining side of things as well, and the oil and gas. So yeah, it's a very interesting stock. The other one which piqued my interest is Kendrick Resources. up about 35% this morning. I think this has got to be worth a play just on the fact that it's only worth, it was only worth 800,000. I think it's maybe worth £1 million now. It's a shell, basically, because I think most of the assets that were in it, except for one, I think has been sold off or not renewed. So I think we'll have to see what's happening, but obviously something's happening.
Okay, all right, I'll check it out. One that's caught my eye this morning, although the shares, they've had a good run, and so they're down 5% so far, that's about 8.2p, is Ferro Alloy Resources. Have you saw the news there, Kevin?
Yeah, I saw the news. The news looked cracking, and then the share price has gone down. What's that all about?
Just buy the rumour, sell the fact, I suspect. Not that I ever knew there was a rumour going around, but you know how this market is. As soon as you get some news, it seems to be an excuse for people to sell stock. But yeah, they signed a memorandum of understanding with a supply of up to 360,000 tons of carbon black substitutes to Qingdao Master Tire Company. And as you may recall, that this carbon black can be used to sort of immerse into a rubber tire, and it strengthens the tire, makes it more durable. So yes, they've signed a deal. No financial metrics were disclosed, but it looks sizable contract. From what I understand, this product can sell for between $1,000 and $2,000 per ton, maybe even higher than that. So you can do the maths on $1,000 a ton, at $360,000 tons of carbon black, and you've got $1,000 per ton. That's $360 million.
That's a lot of money.
Or for a number of years. And to think that this is a byproduct of their vanadium is just remarkable. It's almost as if the vanadium is actually the breadwinner, and the vanadium is almost like a byproduct of the byproduct.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good. Well, we spoke with the management this last week, and yes, we're hopeful that they're going to come on to the podcast next week. So yeah, watch this space for Ferro Alloy. We're going to give a full interview with them and see what happens. So the other one that that I really like is Delta Gold Technologies. Well, what can we say? IPO'd at 10p in December, currently 27p on the ask. Very, very tightly held. Market capitalization of £15 million, which is peanuts compared to the quantum computing stocks in America, which are all worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and one of them is worth in the billions of dollars. I can't see how this isn't going to just keep motoring, to be honest. I think it looks fantastic. As you know, a few weeks ago, we had Michael Jones on and interviewed him about the stuff. And I'm looking forward to whatever future news comes over the next few weeks and months. But I think I can't see how it's not going to be worth £50 million plus, okay, which is like three or four times what it is worth now, purely on speculation of what they might be able to do with the stability of the qubit with the nanostake gold. This alone as an idea, companies are going to want to be part of this. And if the idea works itself, well, then God forbid what it could be worth. It's absolutely unbelievable what it could be worth.
Kevin, let's just go back a bit. And by the way, thank you so much for telling me about this at Jonathan's party, because I managed to get involved in the IPO. So thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Just tell me, if you were to try and explain this to a layman, how would you describe it?
This is a company which is trying to win the IP of universities in the quantum computing space that can then be monetized. They have to fund the universities, fund the research, and then subsequently have the IP in the quantum space. Currently, they have Toronto University. I know for a fact, that because it's been in the interviews, that they're talking to other universities around the world. And that will then be a system where developments in quantum computing with the specialists of the world will then drop, the IP of that will drop into Delta Gold Technologies. Any of those ideas could literally be worth hundreds of millions of pounds, if not billions of pounds. In simple terms, that's what it is.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully our readers understand that, or viewers, I should say.
I'm going to give you a slight update as well, because we picked our 12 stocks about a month ago. I just want to give you an idea of how much that those stocks have gone up, so that people can see what we've been up to. So just hold on one second. So as it stands at the minute, the best stock is actually probably Delta Gold. It's up about over 50%. We've then got Ajax Resources, which we also picked, which in fact that is actually the better stock. Ajax Resources is up roughly 100%. So we have our first bagger, so congratulations, Graham.
Congratulations.
We have Ajax Resources up 100%. We have Delta Gold up more than 50%. The next one is then Extract Resources up 51%. Jubilee Metals up 42%. Bazant Resources up 37.5%. Greatland Gold or Greatland Resources up 21%. Solvanus up 12%. Upland Resources up 7%. Energy Pathways up 5%, Guardian Metal up 4.5%, Haydale down 5%, and WeCap, which is very disappointing, is down 21%. That's our worst performer, is WeCap.
I'm not too concerned about that fall, because at some stage they'll renegotiate the loan, the convertible loan, and I would hope that the revaluation will easily surpass, hopefully, the price we did the review at.
Yeah, at the current share price of WeShop, you're looking at around 14p is the valuation of what WeCap should be. Because WeShop has dropped quite a bit. I happily say I've been a buyer in the markets over the last while. Just to increase and reduce my average, because I bought in during the Coca-Cola foam bit, which was not good. I think we are effectively about 20% up across the board, and that's not a bad start for a month, is it?
Not a bad start. And how's it getting? How are you going on the Sunday roast? How are your winners getting on there?
The Sunday roast is. From the picks that we've had so far, the Sunday roast is up about 33%, so it's better. But actually, part of that is because we bought before we launched ours. So that week before Christmas was exceptional.
A pound.
Yeah. Plus, there's been some good returns from other stuff as well. They have Amarok was picked, and if we never mind the Sunday roast, but let's go to the moonshots, because we picked four moonshots, and they haven't really performed as yet. African Pioneer is up 21%, and then we've got Genflow up 6%, then Gfinity's 3%, and Emerson is down 5%. So our moonshots haven't really moved very much at all. But we'll keep an eye on them as the year goes through, and let's see where everything goes.
Okay, well, Kevin, thanks for that summary. Wishing you a very good week, and to our viewers, don't forget, if you like what you see, please like and subscribe to Monday Upbeat Markets, and remember, mum's the word.
This podcast was brought to you by Monday Upbeat Markets. If you would like to appear on a future episode of the Mums Podcast, please email mondayupbeatmarkets@gmail.com.